It's 10 o'clock Mountain Time. It's time for Tom and Shane, Business and Politics. And here we are. And Shane, over the years on radio, we have talked about solving all kinds of problems. And I thought it would be a good idea today if we put all those problem solving in one podcast so everybody could see how we solve all the problems of the world.
Well, I think it's probably a good idea. Those 10 eye-opening charts depicting the shocking state of the economy right now you sent me.
Yeah.
That was a bit rich and overwhelming. Well, let's start with Social Security. This one's an easy one for me.
All right.
The reason it's an easy one for me is because Social Security was created, as we know, for retirement. And we also know that Social Security is funded by payment by American people, close to $1 trillion a year on $850 million a year is paid in. Mm-hmm. And right now it is unable to invest in anything but U.S. debt. You know, it's holding about $5.1 trillion in debt. It's owed basically about $2.9 trillion by the federal government that borrowed from it. And so my feel that this is very simple. You get the social administration, Social Security administration together with the Secretary of Treasury, and you sit down discuss how we're going to take and solve the Social Security problem. Well, they did it in 2008 with the banks when you ran into the problem that you had 20 years ago. So you'll do it one more time. So you take, say, $1 trillion of the debt that's now held by Social Security. Basically what you do is that the Social Security Trust Fund is run by a governance board of trustees. Right now, you're lucky. It's only Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, Marty Walsh, the Labor Secretary, Becerra, the Health and Human Services Secretary, and, of course, Mr. Kijakazi, who is the Social Security Administrator. Your president hasn't picked two public trustees. They've been vacant since he's been president. So you sit down with these four people. You sit down with the Federal Reserve Chairman Powell, and you call in four major banks like you did before. It can be any of four of the top four, Bank of America, JP Morgan, so forth, Citibank. And you say to them, okay, you're each going to buy $200 billion dollars or take $200 billion in this debt, which is going up and creating greater value for you. And it's an asset on your books, so that's a good thing. And you're going to convert it to preferred shares to the Social Security Trust Fund. And those preferred shares will buy it at an appropriate time, probably another 4 or 5 months when their stocks will all be cheaper. And it's convertible to 20-to-1 common shares if you don't pay the interest on it that you're going to be charged, which will be 10% of your gross income, not net, not after tax, gross income. And this will go on until these this debt matures, and then you'll use that money to buy more to continue if you like, or we'll just continue collecting. You then finish with them and you call in, you know, five of the big guns. The big guns to me meaning, you know, the major private corporations that obviously are going to be around for the next, at least 50 years. And that would be Amazon, Google, Berkshire Hathaway, probably Meta, and Coke. And you say the same thing to them. Okay, you're each going to take $200 billion in this debt from Social Security. I'm working out $2 trillion. You're each going to take $200 billion in debt and convert it to preferred shares with a 20-to-1 conversion rate to common if you don't pay us. And we're going to take 10% of your net sales, not gross, but net, you know, after expenses and before you pay taxes. So now you're paying 10% to Social Security pre-tax, and everyone will think you're wonderful guys because you probably the only ones that'll be around 50 years from now. When they mature, you can buy more, and if you like, or you get your money back that you are entitled to. And Social Security is now funded endlessly if the Congressional Budget Office runs the number on these 10 investments of $2 trillion from what exists now in Social Security. It will not only in 30 years be flat, but in cash and to an end of whenever new companies come along. You convert some of the debt to stock in the other company, sell it, and do the same with future ideas that come along in with new technology. We know that right now that the electrical flying vehicle industry, even Morgan Stanley and now Bank of America, acknowledge $1.5 trillion industry by, 2050. So, that's something the government should be looking at, too, as a potential investment to save Social Security.
Yeah. Well, we've always talked about Bush wanted to privatize it way back when he was president.
That's
and
right.
I think that was a smart idea. It only makes about 3%, I think, at best. They put it into Treasury bonds is where they're putting it.
That's
in
all
now.
They do. Yeah, that's all they hold. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now with the downturn in this recession that you've been in since February, and my expectation that stocks are still trading at a discount, all the stocks I mentioned, all of them, will be down 40-50% in the next 6 to 9 months anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's when that's when you do it. And so you convert them, at $25 to $50 on the FANG stocks, the bank stocks, and you go to the house and everybody's happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the other thing we got to think about, too, is that Social Security is, the way it's set up now, and Congress could easily change that. The way it's set up now is that, money's taken out of your paycheck, supposedly, although your employer pays all that. You don't pay any of it. But the issue is that all of the government is in one pot. The military is not going to run out of money. So why is Social Security going to run out of money? It doesn't make sense. All they'd have to do is change it to where, whatever's allocated for the Social Security needs, just like whatever's allocated the military needs, they get that money.
Well, of course. And all the benefits that are provided are paid by your budget right now, which is an additional, 60% of the budget. So, already you have a problem just covering, healthcare and other things of Social Security. But this idea is the concept of solving it long-term, like forever, number one. Number two, it answers the total dilemma, why aren't companies paying more?
Yeah.
So now they can all run around and pound on their chest. We're all paying. We're saving Social Security. We're the winners. And investors can look at this as a very positive thing because they can see they're holding U.S. debt that's generating money for them. And all this debt goes on all their balance sheets as an asset. It's not a liability. So they win big time in the realm of public opinion. Policy-wise, it's smart because it doesn't hurt or affect your debt at all. And it doesn't have cause for the government to have to pay out. The other great thing about this, I said by 2050, Social Security will be flush. I'm saying really by 2035, it'll be flush. But by 2035, they'll be able to cover all their costs. Mm-hmm. So that additional cost to your budget every year will be gone. There won't be any payout to Social Security other than people paying in, millennials, the Zs, the Ys, they should. And everybody's happy. I mean, this is common sense. This is simple. I don't know why an economist, a politician, all these brilliant people, bankers and everyone else, they came up with a solution to save the banks and the auto industry 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, they let, you know, several trillion dollars go down the drain in real estate and other mm-hmm. bankers that their competition. And, you know, so this is to me very simple. It's not this isn't difficult. You don't even mm-hmm. need the Congress or the Senate to do this.
Yeah.
You know, you just need the trust fund of Social Security mm-hmm. administrators to do it. They just sit down with, like mm-hmm. I said, I mean, the Secretary of Treasury is already on the board. Mm-hmm. So they just need the Powell and
get it done.
The four of them, because two vacancies. So the four of them sit with the banks, sit with the stock hold, you know, the other FANG and other stocks they're going to convert the debt to, and bam, you can they can continue to buy government debt after this with the money. Not only they'll continue to secure from the interest generated as preferred shareholders, but think about the huge opportunity in the future. I mean, in the future, there will be other great Metas or Amazon.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so they could convert some of their stock, like, you know, and then sell it to buy into those. Mm-hmm. And then they don't have to give up anything other than selling the stock in companies that are back, hopefully, where they once were before.
Yeah, that'll work. Tom says, Tammy says, you have a good show. You just need more subs and viewers. And that's the truth. We do. So don't forget to subscribe while you're here. So let's move on, Shane. Let's tackle the next thing on our list. We the national debt. Last time we paid off the national debt was 1850. In World War II, the debt to ratio, debt to income ratio was 120%. We didn't pay it off. We outgrew it. Our economy just eliminated that debt. And now we're in the same situation now where our debt to income ratio, I think, is around 120 again.
Well, okay, here we go. This is real quick, more common sense.
Yeah.
$31.4 trillion in debt. All right, held offshore by other countries for the purpose of being able to trade with America and the world is $7.8 trillion off of, or 7.3, we'll say. So you take 7.3 off that, right? And you're at 54, right? Or 24 trillion. As I just said, that 24 trillion, there's 5.1 in Social Security. So you're down to 18.9 trillion. China's holding 190 billion, just a trillion. You cancel it. They screwed you on coronavirus. They screwed you in trades. They're screwing you with the drug war. So boom, you're off another trillion. So now what are we at? We're down to 13 trillion, right? Mm-hmm. You go to the bank. You go to the departments of the cabinet. 21 of them. They're holding in excess of $6 trillion. It's just sitting there. Well, there you go. So now you take that and they pay off, you know, they return it to the Treasury, drop the debt another $6 trillion. Wow. Now you're down to $5 trillion, right? Mm-hmm. So the $5 trillion that you have holding is basically held by institutions, you know, corporations. It's held by investment institutions for retirement funds. Mm-hmm. And you're back to a manageable debt of $5 trillion. There you go. That's it. Done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of that, we just passed an $858 billion.
That's right.
Bill for the armed forces or whatever to fund Japan or fund Ukraine and a bunch of other stuff. Give military raises. Hang on.
No,
I'll get to you in a minute.
Okay.
Hang on. I want to make a point and then we'll
then
get to you.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited too. But anyway, this $850 billion they gave to the military is half of that is what we pay to service the debt. The national debt, about $400 billion.
That's correct.
So we could easily give double what we pay on our debt to the military.
Well, that's right. But keep in mind, all this money that they've said is going to Ukraine isn't. It's going to the Department of Defense. to replace all the equipment that they are basically advancing to the Ukraine. You know, FDR did this with Britain, not to, so he wouldn't end up in war with Germany. It was called Lend-Lease. You know, before the U.S. got into the war, which a lot of people don't know, U.S. never declared war against Germany. They declared war against Japan on the 9th of December, you know, 2 days after December 7th. And on the 10th, the next day, Hitler declared war on the United States. But before that, to save Britain, FDR came up was the Lend-Lease. Boy, why can't people look at this stuff in history? Well, Lend-Lease was simple. We will lend and lease everything you need. The first thing he did right off the bat was 24 destroyers to Britain. Mm-hmm. And then they started the runs to Murmansk in Russia and to England with, you know, ships and equipment and everything they needed. Well, at the same time, double supplying it because they knew they'd have to launch from Britain to invade Europe at some point. So it was a double operation. We have to remember, you know, you didn't have a military at the time. You had about 1.4 million men under arms at the time, which grew by the end of the war in 4 years to 12 million men and women. That's huge. Like, what you did was astronomical. So you can get it done. America's good at this stuff. They've got a history for doing it.
Yeah, I was going to say we're pretty easy going.
Just common sense.
Yeah. And I will repeat, for it doesn't matter who's in office, doesn't matter whether the Democrats are in office, Republicans are in office, doesn't matter who controls the government. Debt is not a problem as long as you can service it.
That's correct.
That's the same as in your own household. If you can pay your mortgage, put food on the table, heat lights, go to work, come home, you know, if you can afford all those things, then debt's not an issue. You can service it.
And we need to reiterate this because we've been targeting this since May of last year when I saw not the inversion of the bonds in the market, but what I saw was a failure of U.S. Being able to sell debt. You know, the market was going crazy because earnings per share were such a great reason to buy stocks at 35 times earnings, you know. Stocks were trading at hundreds to thousands of dollars. Everybody was... I mean, it was like 1929. It was ridiculous. And I said, this is it. This is the top. Mm-hmm. We're in trouble. There's a crash. You know, there's going to come a crash. Mm-hmm. And anyway, the bottom line is I started following and reporting on our Saturday show about the failure of the Treasury sales. Since May of last year, less than one third of any offering by the U.S. Treasury on Tuesday of any type of debt instrument, less than a third of it's been taken down. And, you know, there's 28 banks around the world that are, you know, basically they're supposed to bid for and buy. So who's been buying it? Well, the Federal Reserve was. And then in May or April and May, Powell came out and he said, we have to do something about the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve. Why? Well, it's got $8 trillion of your debt. And it'd been buying it for 20 years, along with mortgage-backed securities. At about $4 trillion, so like a $12 million, you know, balance sheet. And he said, I've got to sell $4 trillion in U.S. debt. And it's like nobody heard him. I mean, he's been saying this since April of last year. He said it in Jackson Hole in August, remember? Mm-hmm. I brought it up again. He said he sat around with these guys and said, come on, you guys have to get your shift together because you're not buying U.S. debt. And they'll thumb their nose at him. So what did he do? Started raising the bank rate.
Yeah.
And it's not about inflation. He doesn't care. Mm-hmm. It's not about the price of food or gas. It's not about the economy. It's about one thing.
Right.
You raise rates. If you raise the bank rate, the market will raise interest rates, particularly on U.S. debt, and the price of bonds will go down. Now, they've inverted a couple of times, meaning they have dropped below their face value of $100. But the reason he continues raising them was because last month, or at the end of October, beginning of November, they inverted again and went back over 100. So people are buying it out of the market, not directly from the Treasury, but out of the market because the rate on that debt is moving higher. If you buy debt from the U.S. Treasury, the interest rate on it is now 0.005. Mm-hmm. Now, that's just... Yeah. I mean, who's asleep at the watch here at the Treasury Department? I don't know. But there you go. Enough on debt. We don't want to keep the people too long. Next solution we need, right?
Yeah, homelessness. We got to get rid of the, we got to get all the homeless people off the streets. So.
That's right. And we came up with this solution, another common sense solution we started talking about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And so what we did is we looked at the United States Department of Veteran Affairs. And why did we do that? Well, we did it because it's a remarkable global operation. I mean, globally in the sense that the hospitals it has, I mean, you know, it's taking care of, you know, 16 million World War II veterans, 4 million World War I veterans, not to mention the veterans from, you know, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and the more recent wars in the Middle East. But throughout all of this, they've always maintained an amazing operation. And so when you look at the veterans situation that they have, I mean, they have, what is it, 146 VA medical centers, and they're massive across the United States. Mm-hmm. They have 772 community-based centers, 134 VA community living centers. And there's others that, you know, they employ 350,000 employees. You know, they have an annual budget, Ari. Here we go, $2,313 billion. Now, people go, why are you talking about the Veterans Administration or Health Administration? Well, because the veterans are aging, right, Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you're a vet, you're one. And one. So, you know, when you look at the changes, I mean, right now today, 37% of veterans today are over 70. And, you know, that's pretty significant, meaning that while there are still veterans from World War II, not many, and Korean Vietnam, they're not as the great numbers that they once were. They're down. It's down 18% in the last 2 years of veterans being cared for. So you work with the Veterans Administration, you sit down with Human Health Services, and you create a new, what did Kennedy call his, where he had the group of Americans that they got together to work for America. I can't remember it. I'm sorry.
I don't remember.
Anyway, what
it
you
didn't
do
work anyway.
what you do is you basically enlist all homeless, all of them, everyone, that are on drugs, particularly, not families, because that's a different problem and it can be solved easier by FEMA. But you take all the people that are on the street on drugs, and basically the government retains them in some capacity. They come up with some great name for it. Save America, save the homeless, whatever you want. And they immediately move them into the veterans system, and whether as outpatients or inpatients, and because everything's there. You know, the Veterans Administrations have incredible people to help people with mental issues, drug issues. All these issues are problems that the veterans have now. So rather than disband it as the veterans age and pass, like all of us will eventually, you use it to work towards solving the homeless problem. And then, you know, you get FEMA to gather up all the families, house them in all of the equipment that they have. It's just sitting in storage for right now, and work with Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac, like we've suggested, to solve the debt, you know, the student debt problem. But work with Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac, government agencies that can lend money to them, you know, at a low interest rate, even at the Fed rate. So it's not a bank rate, and find them housing and put them in housing and help them. There you go. Common sense. Yep. This is not this doesn't even require legislation, Thomas.
Yeah. Canada does a pretty good job of the homeless. Why don't you tell us what they do in Canada?
Well, basically, the housing system up here is predicated on a provincial basis. It's not a government real problem, but most provinces deal with it on a provincial basis. Well, all provinces deal with it on a provincial basis. But we still have homeless, and the homeless that we have refuse to get any help. I mean, they put them in hotels, they take them into hospital, and they get up and leave. So the biggest problem we're having is the mental issue. And the problem, then, it's not a money problem or a solution problem. It's just we don't have enough psychiatrists or psychologists or social people to help them. And so that's really the biggest problem we're facing right now, is trying to remedy that.
Yeah. All right. Let's move to term limits. The big problem with term limits is the pension plan. Can't be paying these people when they leave forever. You got you replace the House every 2 years, and the Senate, you replace the House and a third of the Senate every 2 years. So if those people leave, then you've got too much pension out there to we'll eventually break the bank. So
yeah,
if you're going to have term limits, you got to have, we've got to say, well, you're either not going to get a pension, because the founding fathers didn't way back when Congress was started. They got off their farm and came in and served and went back home to their farm or their business. And yeah, I think politicians need to do the same thing.
That's right. The balance sheets just for the Congress, House and Senate, and the White House are massive. They're billions of dollars. And the reason for this is because they want to have the lifestyle that they've had and will continue in wanting to have it. Yeah. So you do have a term limit. People don't want to accept it, but it's every 2 years. Look, if Americans voted the way they did, last year, this whole issue that you're looking at now, where you're in this recession since February, it's going to get worse. It could go into a depression, because, I've made this clear. I've looked at these numbers. I don't, and a lot of it is that numbers right out of China. They don't believe it's a fascist state. They control everything. They run all of the country. There's no cash. It's virtual money. The only cash left isn't cash. It's coin in the rural part of the country. And right now, because of their shut-ins, between 300 and 400 million people are shut in because of COVID, they're claiming, but that's not why. The reason why is they're losing their jobs, and they've shrunk to 3.6 GDP this year. I don't believe that. I think it's two, maybe 2.5. So they've got terrible population demographics. Over 60% of the people in China are over 65 years old. So they've got all these problems. The economy is falling down. Companies are leaving in a massive way. They can't find workers because of their COVID, and because they want to lock people down, because people are going to find out they don't have jobs. So between the problem of not being able to fill jobs that are needed and the people that have lost jobs, bad situation. Now, I'd like to remind everyone that unlike Spain in the 16th century that brought huge value and riches back from the Americas, they just spilled it out. They didn't invest any of it in Spain. They just spent it. And the result of that was Spain never became a real European power, and that's what's going to happen, because in China, they took all this great wealth they'd created in the last 40 years from trade, and then they put it into building 20 cities from the ground up for 10 million people in each city, 200 million people. We've covered this for 10 years, talked about it, the ghost cities of China. Now they're tearing them down. Yeah. Real estate prices are collapsing. They've got 87 million condos and apartments empty because Chinese people won't move to those cities or buy it. They don't trust the real estate market or the government. So I could go on for 10 more minutes about China, but the bottom line here is that the trading issues that everyone's talking about aren't going to be as important as they're trying to make them out, because Americans now are being forced, and this is going to hurt China, to buy what they need and not what they want. Consumption's going to go down. That's going to hurt China. all across Europe. I mean, I was looking, watching and reading about Britain, 2 billion in lost Christmas in business in the restaurant and food industry this Christmas. 2 billion pounds or pounds sterling. That, I mean, it's like down 60% from last year.
And what does this have to do with term limits?
Well, it all is tied in because you got to look at the whole thing on a global basis. So you have a 2-year term limit. They don't want to acknowledge it. And nobody wanted to vote and change these people. So, you know, having term limits, I don't know is that if that's an answer. But it would take a constitutional amendment, 2/3 majority of passage in the House and the Senate, and it's not going to happen. So we have to come up with some other valued reality, and that is you got to pay attention to what's going on because you get what you deserve and vote for.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the states, many states limit their governors and some of their legislators and things like that.
But, well, the states are left to do that.
Yeah, right? So, on the national basis, it's probably not going to happen.
No.
Let's move down to the southern border. Jean-Pierre, whatever her name is, the press secretary, says, it's not open. The border's not open. Well, I don't know. If you look at the if you look at the news reports, it sure looks pretty damn open to me. And, you know, the Border Patrol is overwhelmed with trying to process paperwork. That's the deal that they have. My quick solution is build the wall, because people will go where there isn't a wall to go through, and you can maintain a force there to process these people. But until you get that wall up, come on. You know, I mean, they're not going to climb over it. They're not going to tunnel under it, although they do or have. But that's few and far between. So, you know, most of the drugs come through the checkpoints. They don't come across the border, but with somebody in a backpack. They're coming through the checkpoints.
The U.S. had an army on the border with Mexico from 1850 to 1914, and moved it because of World War II. So it's having the military down there is not a problem. I mean, they try to make it one, but it is number one. Yes, you build the wall. Number two, but number three, and this is so important. Trump solved the problem. He has a treaty with Canada, or your country has a treaty with Canada, called the Third Country Treaty, meaning an immigrant or an asylum seeker or a migrant can't come into Canada and then go to the U.S. Vice versa, you can't come in the U.S., go to Canada. Third Country Treaty. He found this. Wow, this is great. Forced all these countries where all these people are coming from, all of them. Seven countries signed similar agreements with the U.S. and it stopped it. That's what stopped it. Yes, Mexico put 28,000 men on their border, but there were nobody coming because the government's now on the threat of not getting any aid from the U.S. Stopped their people from leaving their country and going through Mexico to come to you know, because under the Third Man Treaty or Third Country Treaty, you couldn't leave Venezuela or you couldn't leave Nicaragua and go through Mexico to get the U.S. Biden dumped those the first 3 days in office. So it's again, you don't even need the Congress. You don't have all this BS, this shift you're hearing from the Biden administration and this woman that just has a big notebook. You know, that it's the Republicans' fault. It's not. It just reinstate those. And the agreements were great. Unlike the Canadian agreement, which is a treaty, Trump didn't put it before the Senate to approve them as treaties because the Democrats weren't going to approve them. They told him, you send those to the Senate for approval, we won't approve them.
So we won't do it.
This is the of all the things we've talked to today, simplest thing. Overnight, reinstate those agreements. No one comes.
Yeah. Well, and for those dumb enough to think, well, a ladder will defeat the wall. I'm trying to picture 600 people standing at the foot of a ladder, you know, kids trying to climb it, pregnant women trying to climb it. And then you need two ladders, right? You need one for the other side. So
well, I checked it out.
Yeah, I mean, that's stupid.
The interesting aspect of this is less than 18%. 18% of the people coming across that are Mexican. This 5 million people. Yeah, the 5 million people are coming principally from Venezuela and Nicaragua, and the other countries in the region. And of course, from anywhere else in the world, they can get a ticket to Nicaragua or Venezuela or, you know, Ecuador or whatever. So even to Mexico, if they can fly to Mexico and then get to the border, they will. So, yeah, this isn't a problem with Mexico. It's a problem with those seven countries that we're talking about. And so all these things are, they're not hard. They're all common sense, but no one wants to talk about them, Tom. No one's covered any of this talk, any of these issues or items or ideas.
Well, that's why I wanted to put them all in one place, you know, so we can talk about them here. And people can leave comments and whatever as they see fit, and you know, let us know what you think, what your solutions are, what your ideas are, and we don't know. So
my final statement, because this could be a show we really want for the records. I do want to put this in. Last November, we called the top of the market. We told everyone, you have November, December to sell, get out. If you don't want to sell it all, sell half of it. Get your money back and keep whatever else you have. So you had 2 months. 2 months ago, I suggested there be a Christmas rally. There has been somewhat, but that's based on what's called a bull rally. They're shorting the market when it moves up, and they talk people into buying, and then you see these huge downturns, and that's short covering. Now, here's the bottom problem. You went into a recession in February. We called it. You're there. Now, we went over this. There's six causes of recession since 1972. On another show, we've defined them, but we've already been on for 35 minutes, so I'm not going to... You know, there's push, there's inflation, there's supply side, there's six different types of... This is the perfect storm. All of these causes are involved.
At once,
Three things about every recession you've had since 72. Always been caused by something than before. Always worse than the one before. And always extended. So this is extended. We're only maybe at the middle or the beginning of the middle. You know, we got to the end of the beginning in May. And we may just be in the middle of this recession. But I anticipate it to go longer, to at least 6-7 months. It's going to get worse. Inflation will get worse. The Fed will continue to raise rates until people buy the debt or they come up with some other common solution. But all these FANG stocks, I know you don't like us spending a lot of time, but I want to go through these real quick, Thomas, because I want people to hear it from me today. So Apple's an interesting story. It's a one-shot pony, a 12-year-old phone. Yes, they have other aspects of Apple that they're trying to develop and make work, but it's not working out for them. It's 132. It's dropped massively already. But the problem that Apple has right now is its earnings per share, and this is what we're going to talk about because this is what I called this crash that started last November is the earnings per share crash of 2021. I called it. It's my name. Nobody can steal it. Na 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 na. Well, and the bottom line is Apple's earnings per share right now on their profile is around 25. So they're down, from 11.5 million in cell phones last year to like 9. They can't deliver. You're waiting 3 months. The PE ratio is 21. The old standard until 4 years ago was 16. You never bought a stock trading with more than a 16 PE. So this at 21. Now they've already dropped significantly, you know, from their high, you know, 52 week high of 182 to 129. Yeah. Apple's going to go to 50 to $55 within the next 4 months. Amazon's we're already right in the zero on this one because I've been talking about it. I'm just waiting for it to come up before I can comment. The thing about Apple and Google and even Meta is that they're at this trigger point that we called 6 months ago, and that is they're at that trigger point of $100. So Amazon's $85. $85. We called this 4 months ago, and its PE ratio is 78. So it should drop another 60%. So you're talking at least $35 to $40 on Amazon. Wow, does this sound better for Social Security or what? Can you imagine converting that debt to Amazon? Because if you survive this recession or a depression, Amazon's still going to be around because the social.
Oh yeah, they're not going anywhere.
They're not going anywhere. But you know, it depends on how big it is. Look at Alphabet today, $88. I mean, we called this. We've been 100% on it. What's its PE ratio? 17.85. Now, none of them are meeting their numbers. So at $88, it's going to 75 at least. Yeah. Berkshire Hathaway. This is a real interesting one. And the reason I say it's interesting is because Mr. Buffett has decided and gotten approval from the shareholders to take it private. He can buy it out. Now, this could be one of those companies the U.S. government pegs because, you know, they make $400 million a week. A week. That's $1.6 billion a month. Okay, well, you know, there's no PE. They say the PE. They say there's no
PE ratio.
PE ratio on it. But it's dropped from 457,000 or it's dropped from 544,000 to 456. So it's dropped 100,000. I expect in that within this next six months, he will buy the what you know left. This is the funny. There's 596,000. Let me say it. 596,000. I gotta say it again. 596,000 shares out on Berkshire Hathaway. There's 8 billion shares out on Microsoft. All right. Yeah. So you know, and finally, of course, Meta because. You know, I brought it up. 115, it's up $1.30 today.
Yeah.
Their PE ratio is still at 11.05, but it's bleeding bad. You know, he's saying he's going to create something 10 years from now. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. The only reason I think it looks good, and they might want to swap Tesla out for Meta to survive because of Meta and the tricks that Elon Musk has. I mean, Elon Musk could put SpaceX into Tesla, you know, and talk about launching a stock, right? So, you know, and Tesla's in on the electric flying vehicles. He's already in it, baby. He's already in it. He's working it. And he knows what the value of that's going to be for him because he has the automation. See, the one thing he's got over everyone else in the industry is all five of his plants are all automated. So if he wants to revert from cars to, you know, electric flying vehicles, you know, he, you know, 72 hours, 3 days a week, 10 days, you know, all he's got to do is he's probably stashing all the needs supplies and that he needs on site to start building them. So there you go.
Yeah, a lot of stock.
3 minutes. I know it's longer than you used to.
Yeah, a lot of stockholders are bailing out of Tesla because of Twitter, his obsession with Twitter at the moment. And the Twitter people just voted.
Well, yeah, but they're being misdirected. Yeah, it's just.
Well, the people just voted him down as CEO, and he said he would abide by it. 57% of the Twitter people voted to get rid of him as CEO. So, well, we'll see how that happens. But all of these rumors, all of these things affect stock prices. I mean, they just do. You know,
But that you know, you listen to these doughheads on TV, on all the networks. I mean, the one that starts with F, the one that starts with C, the one that starts with M. I mean, and all the networks, you know, and all day long, these guys are saying, well, look at this stock, and we like this stock, and this stock is up. Meanwhile, they won't acknowledge you're in a recession, but they'll say, oh, the housing industry is in a recession. Oh, you know, the building industry is in a recession. Oh, and you know, these 10 eye-whopping charts that, you know, we should talk about on Thursday since we did this today. I mean, they confirm everything we're talking about today. And that is that this is a mess. And so listening to these people on TV is a zero. They're you can't have areas of the economy that you're claiming are in a recession and the economy isn't. I mean, you know, the five major areas of the economy this year in the recession.
All right.
But there you go.
We got to go. I got to get the dog. I got to get the dog to the groomer.
Gotta go. We've never done a 45-minute show, so thank you, everyone, for staying. I hope you stayed. I hope you share it, because this is one for the ages and our library.
Yeah. Well, the award-winning Tom and Shane, we're live on radio every Saturday. We'll probably be talking more about this on our Saturday show coming up. Christmas Eve, we're going to be on the air, 8 to 11 Mountain Time. Listen live at KMMSAM.com. And all you got to do is click listen now. There's nothing to join, no sign up, no personal information of any kind needed. All you do is click on it and listen. And you can call us, you can text us. It is great. And if you missed any of our past shows, including this one, Tom and Shane past shows are also at KMMSAM.com. Just click on Tom and Shane's podcast, and you can go over and listen to all of our past shows. So that will take care of it for us. So we want to thank you very much, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.